Mics are live.
All right, good afternoon. It is 1:02 on January 16th, 2019. This is a work session on case number PU-18-219, Harmony Solar, siting application. We did have a hearing on this case on November 1st, 2018 in Castleton, North Dakota, and we also had a work session on December 17th, 2018. With me are Commissioners Julie Fedorchak and Randy Christman. And with that, I will turn it over to the portfolio holder.
All righty. Thank you, Brian. Well, it seems like there's really two issues remaining, and I could be wrong. So if you have additional issues, Randy or Brian, feel free to jump in. But one is the decommissioning, and one is the prime farmland issue. And so we did get a new filing on the decommissioning. So maybe, Jack, I'd have you walk through that. And
sure. Would you just like to, I guess I can outline the differences?
Sure.
Which one did you say? Which?
January 14th, there was one that arrived.
This is on the decommissioning?
Decommissioning.
Okay.
Sure, and just I know you guys looked at the previous couple drafts, and I had discussions with all three of you at some point in time over them. But the more recent one, there were a couple things that were changed to accommodate some of the commission requests, including under the project decommissioning and site restoration, that landowners may request that a facility on the as in the access roads remain in place upon commission approval of that request. The third one, there was following the third bullet, there's the following decommissioning plan right above the decommissioning financial assurance. It says the site will be restored so as to be able to return to agricultural production that existed prior to the construction of the solar facilities. Before that said row crop production, but I think there was some concern about how that could actually be interpreted. So it would be at my request, they changed it to agricultural production that existed prior to the construction of the facilities, and I think that mirrors a lot of the other decommissioning plans and requests that we've done. Probably the real major change has been the decommissioning financial assurance. They did, before it was an incremental financial assurance of 25% prior to operation, I believe, 50% at year 10, and 100% at year 20, and they've increased the amount to 50% prior to operation and 100% of the decommissioning costs at year 10 of the operation. They continue to have the estimate without salvage value. So I think that really outlines the main points of the decommissioning plan. I don't know if you guys have any more specific questions or concerns regarding that. I know the incremental bond was something that I heard there were some concerns about.
Well, did they originally propose to have prior to commercial operation, was it 20%?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember
25,
back. It was
25
prior to operation, or it might have been a year five, one of those two, but it was 25% for that first increment.
I thought it was in here before because I wasn't hung up about it, but where's that part about the not using the recycling costs?
The salvage value?
The salvage value. I mean, that's
right.
I just want to mark it in my copy.
It, if you actually look at the decommissioning plan, it has the salvage value at the end. That's the total demolition minus salvage would be $7,807,000, and the salvage is $1,125,000, and if you add those together, that is the estimate of the $8,932,000.
Okay. So then my other thought on this is, you know, we really don't have a rule on this, and I think would have a hard time forcing them into it. So I really appreciate the efforts they've made. I'm not saying that this is how I hope our ultimate rule will exactly be. But in the lack of a rule, I think that this company has really stepped up to try and be accommodating for, you know, the ultimate goal. I think there's one little typo on page 2 in the first full paragraph. That last sentence starts out, therefore the initial 25%, the parentheses 50%, and I think the written out language should be 50%. 50 is what's meant here, correct?
That's correct, Commissioner. I do believe that was just a slight scrivener error. That could be fixed.
I'm pretty pleased with this from the company, but just wanted to be clear that it's not necessarily what I hope we get in a rule.
Sure. I have one little, and I call it little because I think it's somewhat nitpicky, but on the access roads.
Sure.
It says, unless the landowners request in writing that a facility remain in place, should it be any or all of the facility or a portion of the facility, any or all? What if they just want, here's what I'm thinking.
Sure.
And it's probably not applicable for this type of land, but what if they want one of the access roads, let's just say one of the roads that may go, let's just say down the middle, it can go anywhere, but they want that in place.
Right.
And they might want to use it to build a home in the middle of the section or whatever. That doesn't mean the entire facility will remain in place, just a portion of the facility.
Right.
Does that offer, I mean, I'm assuming because we have to approve it anyway, that there's flexibility, but.
Right. And this is consistent with actually our wind decommissioning rules, and that's how that's written up. And I believe the intent was just for access roads, and access roads would be essentially, can be interpreted as a facility because that's something that's used. And consistent with the decommissioning rules for the wind, they would have to have a written request, and the commission would have to approve that request. To allow that.
Should it say instead of that a facility or that any portion of a facility? I mean, again, not to sure. Get super picky on it, but it seems like it's an all or nothing proposition the way it's written.
You mean a facility or any portion of facility? I think because
it's access road facility.
Well, I think we use it, we use the facility in a couple of different interchangeable ways, but one would be we call it facilities. We're discussing all the different items within a sited area. So a facility would be something, a portion that would be constructed of the entire sited area is how I was interpreting it.
Sure. Yeah.
No, but if there's something like that.
I interpret it the same way.
But. Sure. If that's something that you would like to have be changed, it certainly could. I understand it's small, but.
Going back to my original, it's picky.
Sure. Well, if they are going to just do a refile a portion of this due to that 25% change, or if we request that just to replace that, I'm sure they'd be happy to make that change as well.
Yeah, I think it's a simple enough change that it's not going to cause any heartburn. But no, I agree. This is really good of the company to come up with this.
All right. Yeah, for me, it's a significant improvement doing 50% versus 100% or 50 versus 25% and more their original, more gradual approach. I would agree with Randy that I wouldn't want this to be an indication of where we end up long term. We need to go through the process and get feedback and have a good exchange with the stakeholders on this for our complete rules. Jack, just as a little more discussion on the justification for 50%, can you walk through your read of what they use to justify it on page 2?
What I feel that they're trying to get at, Commissioner, is I think there may have been some concern. I think some concern that you expressed that at year 20, 100% of that would have financial assurances would have covered 100% of the decommissioning costs at year 20, which would have been near the end of the life. And I think what they were trying to do to alleviate any sort of concerns that the commissioners may have is on the 25-year, I guess, life, expected life of the facilities, to move all the financial assurances to the front end, as well as verify that these are panels and technology that has that have been vetted so that they're, so you can expect that 25-year life, because I think we've heard of, at times, output from PV panels decreasing over time. And so I think if the concern was that it wouldn't be covered, 100% wouldn't be covered, and maybe it would get to the point where it's only putting out 15% output a year 15, and may essentially be worthless and not be able to cover its obligations.
Okay.
Yeah, that kind of gives you an explanation, I think, of what they were intending. I'm not exactly sure, but I think that's what they're intending to explain.
And that's certainly one piece of the financial stability, and a big piece of the financial stability of a project. But in my view, there are lots of other things that could impact a company's and a project's financial underpinnings. We don't necessarily know all that much about the parent companies and, you know, how these things get transferred over time, et cetera, that, you know, good producing facilities could get pulled down by other circumstances that we don't know. And I think that's the whole point of the decommissioning, is making sure that there's dedicated funding source available that covers worst-case scenarios that go beyond just the facility and the technology not working anymore, or the facility not producing, et cetera. But the fact that, do I read this to say that they actually have a warranty on these panels that covers a good portion of the estimated project life?
It does look like that. Right at the end, I think the last paragraph, or the second to last paragraph, the last sentence or second to last sentence, they talk about defect warranties for a period of 25 to 30 years.
All right. Okay. Well, that. Do you guys have any other issues or concerns on the decommissioning?
I don't.
So we're good with that. All right. Then we can move over to the prime farmland issue.
Can we take up another small one before we acknowledge the elephant in the room?
Yeah. Let's do it. Get the little ones. Any little ones or other issues.
And I was going to look at this, and I apologize. I forgot about this issue. But I had it in my mind after the last time we talked. Number three at the end of the last order was that Harmony Solar should comply with the updated vegetation management plan with the seed mix source commitment set forth in late filed exhibits number 11 and 13. I read 11 and 13, and they sound good to me, except for that in 11, at the end, it says Harmony Solar has revised section 2.7 of the plan to address the commissioner's comments. I was always going to go back and read section 2.7 and confirm that his comments were addressed. I forgot to.
Sure.
Have you?
Prior to the last discussion we had, I did go back and read them. I apologize, I don't have them in front of me. I thought that was a resolved issue after the last work session.
I'm pretty I mean, they were simple. I'm pretty confident that they would have. He had mentioned a couple things that to mention specific a couple certain weeds, and I'm sure they have. So I'm not going to hold this up anymore, but I do intend to go back and read 2.7 and make sure that they have, in fact, addressed those.
Absolutely. I do believe that we spoke about that last time, but I'll follow up and make sure that that is the case.
It does specifically add the Palmer amaranth and some language about ensuring that the seeds are tested by, you know, the appropriate entities. So I think it appears I'd have to.
And I see they mentioned that they will monitor the state and county list for changes. That was one of the things he had mentioned, because it's a evolving list. It looks to me like they've got it here. So Thanks. I guess if I'd have just read it instead of while I was talking, then I'd have concluded. I think we're good on that.
Okay.
Okay. So then we can talk about the prime farmland issue. Anyone have any comments they want to lead with on that regard?
Well, I will just say, as important as private property rights are, you know, private property rights is kind of the most of the extent of things with a lot of development that happens. When it comes to energy development, for example, you know, the easy line is always the transmission lines. That's the most clear one, and so I cite it as the example. You build a 115 kV line or less or smaller, and it's the company and the private property owner. That's it. But the legislature said one time, certain energy infrastructure, and going to that example, anything over 115, there is then just more to it. And they mentioned the... human environmental impacts. That's what I was trying to think of. And then in the rest of that citing app, they called on the commission to develop exclusion and avoidance areas, and the commission did. And no one objected to them for all these many years until now all of a sudden there's a case where it is not such a small amount as most of the rest of the cases were, but something more. And so is it negligible or not? And I understand there can be differing opinions of what is negligible or not, but I can't wrap my arms around any scenario of imaginable energy infrastructure that could take up more prime farmland than this. And the rule has to mean something, so if it doesn't pertain to this, I don't know what it does. I think everything else within the siting law has been met in this case. And based on testimony and such, I'm not sure that that rule is really up to date. And I think that there would be a lot of support for not having prime farmland be an exclusion area. But the fact of the matter is, the reason the rule change procedure is kind of difficult is because people count on consistency there. And if we looked at changing this rule, I don't know, maybe the ag groups or people who are concerned about food production, or maybe there would be opposition to it. We don't know. But I do think there's a rule in place. I believe this falls under it. And I think before I can support approving the project, we need to go back and change the rule and make prime farmland an avoidance area. And under an avoidance area, based on their desire to use that substation, I don't think it's a hard hurdle to get over to say that there's a reason. I think it would be easy to conclude that there is no reasonable alternative for a project that relies on that substation. And so if we change the rule, I think that this is more ready, but I just can't see how I can call this a negligible impact on prime farmland.
Well, I actually went back to the testimony from 1981 that Jack supplied to me. I appreciate that. And this is just a part of it, but I think it's the gist of it. And so I actually did the research on, because I wanted to know, why was this rule developed? And Jack, you can correct me if I'm wrong or if you have a different opinion, or anyone can. obviously, for that matter. But at the time, it was put in place because agricultural producers were not happy about transmission lines crossing some of their best fields because wooded land at the time was afforded more protection than prime farmland. Prime farmland wasn't mentioned. So transmission lines are being shifted onto some of the farmers' best fields. They said, wait a second, how come we don't have the same level of protection? There's, you know, quality doesn't exist in this particular instance. So the prime farmland rule was developed because of, to me, that very reason, because it is just cited or stated so many times in this testimony that it, there's nothing else to really suggest that. I think there was one instance from an environmental group that, that questioned DGC. But the part that I'm going to need a little help on from you know, Jack or whomever is then apparently the wooded land being afforded identified as, I think, as an exclusionary at the time that this rule was developed, was at some point along the line then pulled, but the prime farmland rule remained. So it's an interesting sequence of events, but it was, so as I'm interpreting this, it was to protect landowners, an unwilling landowner from the taking of their property, their land, if you will, through potentially what might have been eminent domain. And so it was offered as a protection to an unwilling participant in a project who said, no, I want to be on equal ground with wooded land, whatever it is. That's my best field, or a section of my best field, a part of it, not as in a section in terms of acreage, but a part of my best field. So then it gets very interesting in this sense, because these are not unwilling participants. These are willing participants that don't need to be protected from themselves if, in fact, my interpretation of how the rule, why the rule was developed in the first place is correct based on, and I'll admit this is not exciting reading. And it's on microfish, so it's actually... You know, I didn't know, okay, is my prescription? do I need reading glasses?
Can't do a PDF search.
Are my youthful eyes just not quite as sharp as they once were? But that was a shameful plug for my vision. But Jack, or anyone, I'm done at this point. But is that consistent with what you've read or what you've interpreted, or is it inconsistent?
Mr. Chairman, to an extent, I would agree that my reading, that's consistent with my reading to the extent that those were the concerns at the time. There isn't a prime farmland requirement for transmission, and there really, it really, we're reading into the, I guess, the general sensibilities of the time when we're reading that, since there really isn't any direct discussion about prime farmland or any of the changes that they had as relates to the rule. But I would agree to the at least the sentiments that you were discussing about there was a lot of concern about the wooded areas and, of course, unwilling participants and their best farmland being crossed by transmission lines. That was very clearly described in there. But as it directly relates to this rule, I guess it's beyond the sentiments. We can't say necessarily that is directly what they're trying to get at here, but. But it certainly is a snapshot into what was going on at the time.
Well, from my perspective, I look at the rule as it exists, or the rule. And, you know, it's certainly interesting to look back and see what drove its development to try to understand what we're supposed to be thinking about or what people back then were thinking about. But even as we look at it just in, you know, black and white today, I continue to feel that there's this exception provided for that. if there was no exception, then I'd be doing what I'd be where Randy is, that we have no choice but to. I mean, it's an exclusion area, and we can't waive that. But there's an exception laid out. So what does exception say? That if the commission finds that the land is of to be such a small acreage as to be negligible impact on ag productions, then this exclusion doesn't apply. So how would we find that? There's no outline for that. There's no parameters set for determining how the commission finds. But typically, how we find things is through our record. And so what does the what does our record say about this issue? The local people, they aren't concerned about this. The farmers own the land. They're not concerned about this. The ag commissioner, who for the first time since I've been on the commission actually sent somebody to the hearing, was silent on this issue. And there weren't any ag groups that testified expressing concerns about this issue either. So all the typical things that I would use to determine and to make this determination and to find that there that this isn't of such small acreage as to, you know, to be of negligible impact, or that it did have a significant impact, there isn't any evidence there to suggest that it doesn't meet the qualifications for the exception. So I feel like we have right within the rule the authority to make this exception as it's laid out. And there's nothing in the record that suggests that that we should be triggering this prime farmland exception or exclusion area. So I just feel like we can do this without, you know, in very, you know, consistent way with how we typically operate with the evidence that we have today.
If that becomes the decision of the commission, I do hope that we still follow through with a rule change, because then we'll have kind of set a precedent. Let me step back. Someone had some comments about, well, you know, they do it with wind farms. I looked, and I didn't survey no one at this room I'm talking about. I didn't look back at a bunch of them because it just takes more time than I was interested in giving it. But I looked back at one recent wind farm case, and of the however tens of thousands, it was one of the really big ones. In that particular case, there was less than 10 acres of prime farmlands impacted. Mm-hmm. And many of our, and of course, they're often built on hills and things like that, mm-hmm. so they aren't in those areas. I didn't go back and look at any, but I remember in pipeline cases and things, we've had these, and, you know, it's going for miles, and then it crosses a little valley, and for 100 feet or something, it might be in one, and cumulatively over a pipeline, there's a handful of acres. The other decisions have been a lot easier, I think. You know, those really, I don't think, took any amount of persuasion to persuade me that they were negligible. Now, between, you know, less than 10 and 1,660 out of 1,660, I don't know, I suppose there's some line where I'd have a hard time deciding, but I think this rule is there and has to mean something. I do hope if we decide to view this as negligible, that we don't then just look at that as, well, we've set a precedent now, and so everything, we'll just call it negligible and move on. I hope we still continue to move forward as I've asked for and change this prime farm, at least have a hearing on mm-hmm. the idea and see what feedback we get. the proposal of changing prime farmland into an avoidance area instead, and that we don't have to continue to just find an exception to a rule all the time.
I agree that it's time to have the conversation about this, and that the best way to do that is through a rule change package. But my only struggle with what you're saying, Randy, is you know, it just from a sort of common sense standpoint, I agree with you that, you know, 1,600 acres it's hard to conceive as being negligible, but that's just kind of like, since there's no formula or any sort of mathematical equation provided to come to a determination on what is negligible, to me, we need to do what we do always when we're making decisions, and that's rely on the record. And the record, there's no evidence to suggest that it isn't negligible, because nobody expressed a concern about that. And so that's why I feel like that's the best standard to use for finding, which is the words that it used, that it's a negligible impact, is that the ag commissioner, none of the farm groups, the landowners, if anybody had come and said, oh my gosh, this is clearly flies in the face of this rule, and this is all prime farmland, and it can't be done, and here's the concerns, then I would have a very different feeling about it. But I think that we're on solid ground to use the record to support that finding, and so I'm comfortable with that.
Except if, and I mean, I know it's only partially on point because the other exclusion areas don't have exceptions, but if this were too close to what are the other exception areas, a national park, and no one came and said anything, it would still be an exception area, even though no one came.
Yeah, but there isn't. I mean, that's the huge difference.
And so the fact that no one pointed out in the hearing that this, in my mind, violates our rule doesn't mean that it doesn't violate the rule.
The big difference there, though, is, you know, and it's night and day, the fact that there is an exception, and in this case, provided, and there is absolutely no exception on those other ones. And so there's no pathway forward for providing an impact to an exclusion area except for where one is already allowed or laid out for us.
I'll agree with you. There's a difference. I don't quite agree it's night and day. I find it more dawn or dusk situation.
I think too.
Because I really have struggled with this. I mean, they've done the rest of the things in the exclusion areas. I'm ready to move on, but
I think it's pretty black and white when you cannot place a structure within the boundaries of a national park or a state park. I think that's black and white. And I think one thing that's really clear from our discussion, not just today but throughout the case, there's a lot of speculation in any form in terms of how you interpret this rule. I mean, it's becomes commissioner's choice, so to speak, and how to interpret it, but this is probably as wide open as anything I have seen since I've been on the commission, in terms of, you want to narrow it down and say, well, it must be this. Well, then I read the testimony, which again was a laborious but I thought necessary task, and it points in another direction. And then you get to the fact that, what is negligible? What's the basis? Is it, you know, just that land itself? What was the intent? It's not clearly defined. So it does be, I mean, that's my struggle in this, is frankly just the degree in which you could speculate what it actually and truly means, because there are a lot of holes in the record when you look at past testimony. It's like, well, doesn't someone just come out and say, here's exactly what it's for? And I don't know that exists. I haven't found it. I didn't come across it.
No, I think in our discussions, it's a bit odd, the leap of how the rule gets changed back then, because there's very little discussion of it. Then all of a sudden, the next rule comes out, and it's changed now to have a definition, and the next rule comes out, and all of a sudden there is an exclusion. So, again, we're looking at the sentiments at the time, but it would have been very nice if they would have had some sort of discussion or some sort of notice of why or when these rules were changed. Just to touch on one of the things that Commissioner Chrisman spoke about when he was talking about the applications for the wind farms, there has been some variance in the applications we received. Some have just given us the negligible impact from the sited area, but we actually have received applications as well that have gone to a broader county level before as well, when they're talking about agricultural productions and prime farmlands. And I know you stated in the last discussion, Commissioner Chrisman, that that's something we really hadn't put a whole lot of thought into, but just so we're fully clear of what we've probably at least received in the past, we've received it both ways.
And the countywide basis is what the company laid out in their brief, correct?
They gave a couple options. They gave the study area as well as the county, countywide. And, but I believe that they believe the correct justification or the correct area to look at was the county level.
Okay.
Which was 0.17% of the prime farmland of the county.
1.1 was it?
I think 0.17. And if you look within that study area, it was 4.5%.
Okay. All right. Well, is there anything else on this issue that anyone wants to throw out on the table?
I think just for the purposes of getting this moving along, too, because it seems like we're all the three commissioners are in agreement about the rulemaking. I have most of this, at least the rules templated up, so we could go forward with that if the commissioners would like to do that. The one question I would have is whether you want it to just be an avoidance or exclusion area, or I mean, just an avoidance area, or just not in there at all. I think if you'll see the recent bill that's been proposed, I think just as a couple days ago, they actually suggested not having it as an exclusion or an avoidance area in that. So I, just for the purposes of knowing how you would like me to actually have it proposed or get the paperwork started, is there a preference?
Can we advertise or notice a rulemaking that's not clear exactly what would be going, that it can be like for the purposes of changing prime farmlands from an exclusion area to an avoidance area or eliminating it as a consideration? Or do we have to be more clear than that?
I think we usually have a rule proposed when we go forward with it. But that being said, all the tests of it's, that's certainly within our, the realm of possibilities that we could say this should be an avoidance area and we decide it shouldn't even be anything at all and just a selection criteria. That wouldn't be beyond, I think, what a rulemaking process could justify.
We could start with moving to an avoidance area, and then if it seems wise as we proceed with it, eliminate it completely.
Right, or I think even vice versa. If you could say we would like to have it as a just eliminate completely and say, well, actually, it still has merit as an avoidance area.
I actually think we kind of are getting off subject, though, because that's a separate process.
From this, you're right.
Yeah, so maybe we should finish up our discussion of the case.
Good point.
And then we can either add that to admin, or I don't know if it falls within this advertised meeting. We can talk about it maybe at the end.
Sure.
Or this notice meeting.
I think it's related enough to the for the purpose of discussion, but it certainly doesn't need to be resolved today. I was just talking about for getting the paperwork ready.
Right.
Sure.
So anything else on this that we want to talk about that either of you guys have issues on? Do you have a preference for how to proceed? Can we have the draft order circulated? And it seems like that's the next logical step. You guys fairly close to having one?
I believe so. I think I pass along to Pat, and then we're going to have a discussion to clean. And there are a couple of things that need to be added in there. I left some markings because I knew they were going to have a late file exhibit coming in.
Okay.
But we should be fairly close, I believe. I don't know how you feel about that, Pat.
Other than rearranging some paragraphs into different sections and so on.
Sure.
It's mostly there.
And is there an urgency to get this on the next agenda, or shall we try to get it on the one following?
I would personally like to have just a little better handle on the direction we're going on a potential rule change. Because I asked you the same question that Julie asked before the hearing, you know, which one are we talking about?
Right.
And how to, making sure I presented it correctly when I described what we were up to today. Because now I realize they're separate, but at the same time, this is the case that's driving a potential change, and having a, I think I understand the direction this is headed,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of the rule itself, but.
Well, the question is, there's two options. We go forward with this case and vote on this, you know, make a decision on this case as it is, or we put it contingent to some rulemaking process. I mean, to me, it's not like if we decide we can't, the decision is, can we or can we not make this decision, or find that they've, you know, meet all the criteria with this rule as it is, or do we need to change it first? Because I think Randy's expressed outside of this piece, he thinks that they meet it. I feel that they do as well. I haven't heard any big concerns from you outside of the, you know, rule this pine farmland exception, that there's other troubles. So I've said I think we can approve it with the existing language and find that there's an exception for the prime farmland. And that's the way I'd like to proceed, and then have the rulemaking separate. But if both of you want to do the rulemaking first, then that's not going to work. I mean, then we can't go forward with the order as it is and find that it's, you know, that it meets the standards. So that's where we're at.
And I mean, I would not support this till we do the rulemaking, and so I guess
you're the decider again. Good thing you're in the middle now.
The hot seat.
So you don't
again, if the company's listening and has forgotten the earlier comments, I mean, it seems like they've gone above and beyond in some areas. And this isn't their area, you know, they can't do something that fixes this themselves. This is what they're up against. And so with all appreciation for what they've done, I just feel like I'm up against this wall.
Probably reiterating what I've said already, but you know, I'm trying to look at this from a practical standpoint, and I think everyone is. But it's highly speculative. And while they are two separate processes, they're certainly related to one another in terms of the prime farmland rule. And if, at the very least, the prime farmland rule looks like it is going to be changed from an exclusion to an avoidance area, or potentially just removed entirely, which could happen through the legislative process, the bill that's currently out there. And then we're looking at, okay, so what is this? So am I to speculate on how to interpret a rule, and I could form a basis in many different ways to interpret this rule, and hold something up, I'm just being candid, for 4 to 5 months until a rule change occurs, at which time the project would then be eligible, and then we reconvene and we spend taxpayer money to pull this all back together and cover the same ground, at least to some extent. So that's what I am wrestling with in all of this. But even advancing the direction of where the rule change may go.
How would we know that? I mean, it's just a, we, there's no way to know where that's going definitively in a 1 or 2 months. You know, the rule changing process takes, so either you have to determine that you can make the decision based on the evidence that exists today, or you can't. And then we have to proceed accordingly. That's the way I see it.
I think that it's a, kind of as simple as either that's a, that exception covers this or it doesn't.
Right. Either you see it like Randy or you see it like me.
Got one each.
Or a person sees it as I just described, which is different. Yeah, a little different.
Well, except for that doesn't lead to a decision now.
Doesn't lead to a decision now, but it does have an influence on the thought process I'm going through in the case. And again, from a practical standpoint, you know, in my own opinion, that's, I mean, to me, it does become a struggle in terms of, okay, if we're headed down this road anyway, and we're speculating to a large extent, which to me is really clear by the different variations of the rule, interpretations of that, of the rule as it stands today, it just makes it a little more challenging. But.
Okay, well, why don't you draft the, send the, put together the order and send it around, and maybe, you know, as we all continue evaluating it, well, things will become more clear.
Okay. And maybe just one point that I could use a work session clarification on is if this is going to have a negligible impact on agriculture production, I guess I'd be curious as to whether the commission would be looking to have it on the county or the, I guess, within the study area level, or if we just want to leave that a little more flexible at the time and just say, here are the impacts within these, from these two different study areas, the county and the study area, and leave it with that at this time.
I would envision it being like up during in the findings of fact, mm-hmm. that the company submitted that the project is of negligible impact because it had X amount of impact on the project area and X amount of impact in the or the study area and X amount of impact in the county.
Sure.
And then I would also envision another paragraph suggesting that there was no evidence provided suggesting that the prime farmland or unique farmland exception should be denied, or some statement to that effect.
I really like the first part of that. I'm less enthused about the second, where our rules hinge on whether somebody mentions anything about them.
Our decisions always are based on the record, though.
But our rules are almost like, to me, a given that we go by, and people know they don't have to remind us of our rules. We have those. They're there to testify on other things they know. And
I guess it says the commission finds that the prime farmland, so if people know there's an exception and they're worried about it, they better come up and show, here's why you should find this. That this is, you know, is not negligible impact.
I think the other statistics you mentioned make the case for reaching that decision. I don't like the idea of the negative part of the last thing you said.
I'm going to make an analogy, and I don't know if it's a perfect analogy or not, but on the avoidance side, if a company is going to be in an avoidance area, they have to show why it cannot be avoided.
That there's no reasonable alternative.
No reasonable alternative, and we expect the company to be able to show that. If the company provides nothing, I don't think we don't say, well, nobody provided any evidence on it. We do want the company to provide the evidence. It's a burden of proof is on them. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's the same thing that should be happening here, is that the company should provide the evidence. And they provided some evidence. And that's, I kind of agree with Randy. I'm not sure I want to go with the second part and say, well, nobody provided any evidence, so there's no reason why we shouldn't allow this exception. Just use the evidence that was provided and then decide on that.
Pat, look, I'm trying to think back at the hearing, and I know we had a number of stakeholders discuss this. Clearly, the landowner didn't have any concerns. And I'm not disagreeing with you by any means. I thought that was a great analogy. I was just trying to recall, because I know we had county representatives and city representatives and stuff in the area, and I don't recall if anyone had any discussion of agriculture production.
We asked a lot of them, so there would be responses to those in the record.
Sure. So if they did have the responses, I know no one did say in the affirmative that there would be. So that may be something, if we did go back, there actually may be stuff in the record saying that these people testified and did not think it was going to have any large effect, maybe not to the terminology of agriculture productions on that broader scale, but that might be worth looking
into. But we did ask people about that at the hearing.
We should look at that.
And to the extent that Witness A said that he or she does not believe that this has Witness A said that they feel this is a negligible impact and so we shouldn't consider that. That's an affirmative thing. I'm fine with that. Like I said, I just don't want to start that we say, well, no one said this is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So maybe we can see what folks said on it, because we did ask about it multiple times.
There's a lot to listen through again.
It's at the end.
That's all good things.
Well, we had a lot of different groups, individuals, interests in the room, and this was not a secret during the course of the hearing.
No.
In Castleton, it was brought up repeatedly and talked about extensively. So I don't think it would catch anyone by surprise either who was present that day.
Okay, so you'll get it around, and we'll go from there. And when it's ready, and we'll get it on the agenda.
Okay. And would you like me to put maybe in a future admin, maybe not this one, but the following one, at least I could give you a draft of rulemaking?
I'd be open to it whenever you're ready, Jack.
I didn't understand. Would we like on administrative what?
On an admin, probably not on this next meeting, but the following meeting, I could probably provide some sort of proposed rulemaking as well. If you would like to see that for discussion.
I think the quicker the better, if it could be done this meeting.
Sure.
I agree.
I can probably even do that.
Even what you've got so far?
Yeah.
We can have a discussion about it.
Yep. Sure, and the actual draft I can have, not the broader stuff, but yes.
Yes, and I do realize it's subject to input once a draft is circulated and notice is given, so. All right, anything else, Commissioner Fedorchak? Commissioner Christmas? Okay, thank you. This work session is closed.